Hey, it's Brooke Moser here. I'm teaming up with Justin Whitmell Early, author of Habits of the Household, to bring you something we believe matters deeply. And it's called Intentional Fatherhood, a podcast for men who want to become the kind of fathers who lead their families with purpose, faith, and steady everyday habits. We believe that fatherhood is spiritual formation. What we do in our homes, the small, consistent choices, shape who our kids become. And if we want to break generational sin and build a legacy of faith, it actually starts with faithfulness right where we are. This podcast is here to encourage you, challenge you, and even walk with you as you lead your family towards Jesus one habit at a time. You can find Intentional Fatherhood on any podcast platform. Give it a listen and let's walk this road together. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, sitting here with my good bud, AJ Swoboda, we want to talk about parenting with scars. Maybe some physical, but mostly we're going to be talking about
mental. Let me show you.
My kid bit me. What is that? Is that
bite marks? Oh no! Can I tell you these stories?
Please.
Of these scars. Yeah, I've got some pretty interesting scars. This actually is because of children.
Really?
It was a kids camp, and I jumped over a wire fence, and it caught my arm.
How old were you?
I don't want to talk about how recent it was, but that's a scar from that. And then this one right here, maybe can't be seen. I'll hold it up.
Oh,
here.
Yeah.
But that right there, I got stabbed.
With what?
I got stabbed. Now, just to be clear, it wasn't by somebody else. I was working at the University of Oregon and I was working in the cafeteria and I was cutting a block of cheese and my arm slipped and a block of cheese.
Yeah.
So I went to the ER. So I was stabbed. I prefer to leave out the, it wasn't by me part. Cause it really does seem pretty cool that it was by, I was stabbed. I have been stabbed though.
I've been stabbed.
A bloody block of cheese. Do you have scars?
I have one on my chin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, tell me about the scar.
Have you seen this thing? Okay, so this is a fun story. So I have a very big scar on my face, which cameras sometimes picks it up. Sometimes it doesn't. But it is always very interesting when we meet in person, because that's when they notice. And their eyes just go from my eyes to my chin. Yeah. They're like, what is that? And I'm like, hey, eyes up here.
I'm up here.
So, long story short, I was 5 years old. I had a cousin who was 14. So when you're 5 years old, a little boy, you have a cousin who's 14, who's a boy, you're like, that dude's legit.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing all this stuff. He had nunchucks.
Oh, man.
A ninja star, a real one. He let me throw it once. I mean, this is big stuff. This is like, he's watching E.T. in the basement by himself. Scary stuff. Like, think about this. Yeah, this is real. This was my life. I was 4 and he gets up on this roof in the backyard. It's like a shed. Probably the roof's like 10, 12 feet off the ground. There was a ladder. He climbed up to the roof and I was like, that's so cool. My mom was like, we're at my cousin's house. And she's like, do not get on the roof.
Yeah.
And I was like, of course. Right. And then I'm out there and he's on there. I'm like, I'm getting on the roof. Like, this is my life. I'm getting on the roof. It's an A-frame. So I climb up, you know, I'm gingerly at that point still climbing up. And then he kind of like goes over to the other side of the A-frame, you know, typical A-frame. There's one side and then he went over to the other side. I don't know even know what he was doing or why we were up there. But my mom was standing doing dishes in the kitchen or something like that at my aunt's house. And she sees out the window into the backyard and sees her 4-year-old son on a very high roof at that for the size. And she just loses it meaning just like for my safety, starts running, get off the roof, get off. Like just like so scared for me. So I'm on the roof. I'm already over on the other side and I'm kind of by this tree. And by the time I like get down to where I can, to the edge to where I can actually like hopefully grab a tree branch to get off. I don't know why I didn't think to just go off the ladder that I went up on.
Loss of cognitive function.
Yeah. Especially at 4, but my mom gets around to the other side. She sees, you know, from about 12 feet up, there's her little boy on the edge And she sees me putting my feet on this shingle because I'm about to like, okay, I'm going to just jump to you. And when I put my feet on the shingle, it was so old that it just broke. So before my mom could even get around to fully like be ready to catch me, I fall faced, you know, down about 12 feet.
12 feet.
And I hit the ground.
You're four?
I'm four. I remember, I think it was five actually. I was five. My body bounced. I remember hitting the ground and bouncing, you know. But what my chin hit was there used to be a chain link fence there.
Yeah.
And there was a hollow pole that had been like shaved off to the ground.
Ooh.
And my chin had hit the very edge of it. So as a five-year-old, it hit my chin. So my mom now is seeing like the situation she didn't want to happen, like totally happens in front of her. She picks me up. I'm unconscious. And I have a photo of this. Like it is gnarly. But a gash, you know, from almost to my neck up to my mouth through my chin.
Hey, did it break the chin?
I did not break anything. Wow. It was like, that was a miracle. Went down to the bone though. And basically, sorry, if anyone is squeamish, apologize. Yeah. Should have given a warning. Yeah. Might be a squeamish
trigger
episode.
Warning. Jeez.
Yeah. Bro. Gosh. Sorry. If you don't like the idea or sound of blood. Anyway. My mom picks me up. I'm unconscious. And she runs me into the house. My dad's there. And I remember waking up because they laid me on the kitchen counter. And I'm laying like, you know, with my head back because there wasn't actually a ton of blood, but that was bleeding, obviously. And they're like trying to keep my head back. They don't know if I broke my neck. They don't know what happened. And I wake up to my dad saying to my mom, go look for the rest of his face. Go outside and look for the rest of his face.
Wow.
Because it was a hole. Like it was a big hole.
Look for his face.
Because they're like, we have to grab this and hopefully.
Wow.
Gnarly. So
and they never found it. Your face is
turns out it just split it. But then my poor mom is crying her eyes out, searching through the dirt for a part of her kid's face.
Oh,
right?
Like it's so sad.
She comes in, they call the ambulance. I remember the whole thing from that point on because it was legit. It was like, I'm in an ambulance. That's cool.
Yeah.
And it didn't hurt too much. But I ended up getting 43 stitches.
43.
All the way from.
And no other injuries.
No, but dude, it was, there was some miraculous things happening on that one, but no other injuries.
Wild.
But a pretty gnarly scar. And then when I was in high school, I was playing, I was like wrestling with some friends in a lake. Long story short, one of my buddies accidentally headbutted me, split my eye open, and I had 7 stitches there. So I had 50 stitches on my face. No, nowhere else, but on my face, 50 stitches so far.
Wow.
So I hope to not get any more.
Wow.
That was a very long tangent about scars. But we're here to talk about...
But scars are like a pretty interesting, like... My pastor, Russell Joyce...
Yes.
Recently wrote a book on scars. He has a really interesting condition where he had multiple surgeries... And he has a huge scar on his face. And he wrote a book called His Face Like Mine, kind of a theology of scars.
Interesting. I've not heard of it.
Scars are interesting things because they reflect a place of hurt or death, but they also reflect a place of like healing, a place where like it's almost like a milepost of pain. Like something that was, but it's not anymore.
Wow.
I think scars are an interesting, like, and certainly there's a lot of scars in the Bible. So anyway, scars are, I think that it's an interesting theme.
What we want to talk about today, this is not as much an interview as much as it is a conversation with my friend about parental scars. You have a story. I have a story.
Yep.
And we have some similar stories of, you know, basically being parents, being fathers specifically, mm-hmm. without necessarily knowing exactly what that even looks like, or maybe even from, I don't know, you know, I want to be honoring to my parents, but, you know, they had a lot that they brought into mm-hmm. their life yeah. and their parenting. And that was, that left a lot of challenges for me when I became a parent in a lot of different ways. And we end up usually replicating what we learned
mm-hmm.
or what we experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we want to have a conversation around this and start with you. Like, give me maybe just... highlights of some of the background, whatever you feel comfortable with, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. what was it like growing up for you mm-hmm. and some of the things, or maybe just the milestones of the pain points or the realities that you were dealing with kind of ongoingly.
And like you, mom and dad love you. Yes. And so it's honoring, and I know my son will talk about me someday. So I'll seek to do so in a graceful way. But yeah, actually my conversion story, I think is a story that is a good place to begin. And that is that, my dad, mom got divorced when I was 11. My dad moved to another state when I was about 12, 13. Hmm. So I was my teenagers. My dad wasn't there, and my mom, you know, raised me as a single mom, did her best until she remarried. My dad left, and it was really, you know, he went away, and didn't just leave. You know, it was halfway across the country. I mean, it was I saw him once a year, and you know, it was always travel, and I had to leave family. And
is that so weird?
Yeah, it's a weird experience. When I was 16, this was where I heard the gospel. I'd never heard the gospel as a kid, or at least I don't remember it. And I was actually in my math class in high school, McNary High School, Kaiser, Oregon, sophomore year. And I overheard these two girls behind me arguing about when Jesus was coming back, that Jesus was returning.
Whoa.
And I was really something about the idea of a man coming back. And it's taken years of reflection to like think about what that image was of Jesus coming back. Mm. I think what was going on, I eventually became a Christian, had a radical conversion to Christianity. But I think what was going on was I heard Jesus is coming back. But what I think my heart heard was dad is coming home.
Wow. Yeah.
And the ambivalent or unattached, that ambivalent attachment I had to my father was the very place where Christ became my dad. I mean, it became my father in a sense. And that hearing the father, Jesus is coming back, was like my heart hearing the man, he's coming back, he's coming home.
Wow.
And I needed, you know,
wow.
It's really interesting how many of my friends are Christians today who had really unattached relationships with their father. And I think for a lot of us, that's a similar thing. Like when dad wasn't in the room, God begins to repair in us. And it's like, oh, finally, a dad is giving me some attention. A dad is listening to me, the father. Mm. So for me, that was a huge, that's a huge wound for me actually, because when I'm teaching my son, humming in the background is always this fear that I don't know how to give my son what I was never given. So I'm constantly feeling like I'm expected to give a gift I was never given.
Yes.
And it's there's a lot of shame in that.
Yes.
That I'm not, like when we did the John Tyson, you know, severing dinner, hike up the mountain. We did the primal path. We're doing it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And when, right before I took him up the mountain this last summer, first 13th, before I took him up the mountain.
Yeah.
He was asking me all these questions about what it's going to be like. Like he thought something scary was going to happen. Like he was like, "What's going to happen up there?
To maul you, son. We're not to kill you.
We will circumcise you on the top of the mountain, right?" Or something. It's terrifying. I mean, he was like scared. We didn't know.
Because you didn't tell him. Yeah.
No, we didn't tell him. I mean, he didn't. He was like really scared. Like, are you going to kill me? Like Abraham was going to kill Isaac or something. And we were driving in my car, my truck. He's sitting next to me. And he asked me the one question that I wished that he wouldn't ask. He said, "Dad, did your dad do this for you?"
Oh.
I didn't want him to ask that because I wanted him to think this is like this thing that's been passed along from generation to generation. I didn't want him to know that I was the one doing it. And I was sitting there and I just was deflated with shame.
Hmm.
And then I looked over at him and he sits up. He's sitting in the truck and he sits up and he goes, "You're doing this for me?"
Wow.
For me? And what was for me shame was pride for him.
Wow.
What was going on in me was feeling like I was giving him something. Who am I to give something away I was never given? But it turns out when the father is the one who reparents you, you do get to give away the gifts that you were never given. Because you were given those gifts by the father. So that story of my conversion actually I think really ties in a lot to my childhood stuff. How about you? I mean, the scars, like what did you bring into?
Well, I just think, oh man, that's a very, what you said about giving something that you've never been given. What was the other phrase you said? You said,
not just about the primal path place, but you were talking about how, you know, oftentimes we are, maybe that's what it is, the giving something that you were never given, mm-hmm. and trying to give stuff.
Yeah.
And then how that makes you feel shame.
Yeah, total shame.
So
yeah.
I want to talk about this for a minute because it's really funny that is the emotion that often comes up for me is shame, but it's a weird one for me because I often am confused by that. Mm. Have you had time to process why it's shame that comes up?
Yeah.
Like, cause you're doing a noble thing. Like when we try to be those types of fathers, right?
Yeah.
We're doing a noble thing.
Yeah.
In that sense, we're trying to. Yeah.
I think it is shame, but it's also sadness. Like,
yeah,
this is an odd emotion to describe, but I often feel tremendous jealousy for my son. Envy towards his experience, because I'm constantly thinking like, you're getting something I didn't get.
You didn't get, especially at this age.
Yes.
You realize that this is the age that you never got.
That's
that
exactly
especially.
Right. And actually, if I'm not cautious, I can use that manipulatively. Like, you realize what you're getting.
Like, I'm around, dude.
Like, yeah. Like, you can use
I'm paying
that
for stuff.
If you're not, you know, awake to your own heart, you can manipulate
sure,
that stuff
sure.
to like weaponize gratitude and all this sort of stuff. But I can't speak for you, but for me, it is a double concoction of shame and grief, of just grieving what I wish I had. I mean, I wish I had an experience of having a group of men take me up on a mountain and initiate me into in a manhood.
I want to talk. So let's actually take a second because I'm doing this with Duke. Let's take a second for fun. Like, we're talking about something, obviously, if you've listened to this podcast or if you've heard of John Tyson, obviously he's doing he put a wonderful program together called Primal Path, and it's an initiation process for young boys. And
it's remarkable.
It's
so
great.
Remarkable.
And John, we love you. Thank you for all that you're putting into the world. But that said, it's a great resource. And I think it's a helpful one for any father that's like, I want to take my son specifically. Yep. And little teaser, Elizabeth right now and Diana writing one for girls, taking Scarlett
beautiful.
Through it and Sunday and a handful of others. So stay tuned, ladies. That said, though, I think one of the things that we're working through and processing, you know, with that whole event was like, I don't know what any of this looks like. Even ongoingly since we started at 13, I didn't know what it looked like. But what I wanted to ask you was, what were some of the highlights of the initiation? Like, what did you guys do? Like, you hiked up a mountain, like, right? Like, give me a couple of the fun highlights that you guys did.
It was so simple. I mean, John in his book, I love how he doesn't dramatize it. It's not like this, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't build it up as like this.
You can plug and play. You can do it as simple or as elaborate as you want.
To do it, yeah.
Yeah.
But... you know, I think that the things that we chose to do was the afternoon before, my wife Quinn had the severing dinner with Elliot.
Yes.
And they actually have an agreement. They do not tell me what happened there. So I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Other than she blessed him and said, I now give you to your dad to raise you and to be, because a woman, there's a limited role a woman can play to teach a man how to become a man.
Yes. That's what the severing dinner is about. Yep. It's about the mom essentially.
It's not the mom saying, I'm not your mom anymore.
No.
It's the mom saying, I'm still your mom, but my days of mothering you are coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between being a mom and mothering.
Yes. Right?
Huge difference between the two.
Big time.
So they did that. And then the day of his initiation, there were five men that went up with him, and we got in a van, drove out, got pizza, just the worst pizza. We had the worst pizza ever.
It would be a memory.
That night, it was the worst pizza I've ever had.
It would be a good memory.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I think he'll forget that. But we got pizza, got some chicken wings that were horrible, made it to the mountain. And we ascended the mountain right as the sun was beginning to go kind of down. And we made it to the top. And it was funny, we got up there because one of the guys like farted really loud when we got up there. And I don't know what it was. There was just something about the moment and the environment where we all for 20 minutes just could not stop laughing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like this euphoric. imagine grown men laughing about farting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Elliot was just loving it.
Yeah,
he loved it. And we just had this beautiful ceremony where all the men gave him something and spoke a blessing over him.
Yes.
And and then we descended the mountain.
It's beautiful.
The thing, I actually don't think he'll remember much of it. He'll remember the whole thing. He'll remember it for the rest of his life. The details will leave him. He will never forget, though. He will never forget knowing that he didn't have to pave the path. He got to follow somebody in the path. That he didn't have to self-create the path. Like this image of him, even as we were going up the mountain, it was really beautiful because he and I were the last two. And he was following, he was following like these men.
Yeah. That had gone before him.
And he didn't have to figure the way out. Like he just got to like, just take the step.
Yep.
Just take the step.
Like God designed it to be.
Yeah. And he and I, the ironic thing was I wasn't the one in the back following my son, which the more I think about it, I think was the Lord's way of like reminding me that my path into fatherliness is through getting to follow my son through his journey. Right. Cause I was right behind him.
So,
and we came down the mountain and, there's very few things we do differently. We do, the daily office 2 times a week together, Wednesdays and Friday mornings. We read the Bible together for a little bit. Most of the time we end up talking about aliens and the end of the world and Bigfoot and stuff, but we're together. We read the Bible
together. Yeah.
He now gets an allowance. So he gets some cash every week, but he has responsibilities.
Yep.
But this is the part that is that he calls these guys.
He calls your friends that you brought in.
He calls.
So maybe just for anyone listening, there's a group of men that is encouraged. Like you obviously can't give everything to your son. So inviting a group of men into his journey as well to depart to him things that they've learned as men. Yes. And to basically not only spiritually, but even just practically relationally, they're going to have different qualities than you. And to really help him be a rounded full man.
He needs more men than me. Like if I'm the only man, he needs a constellation of godly men, not perfect men, godly men who he knows along the way he can reach out to. If I die, he's got other men in his life. And it's been beautiful to me to see him develop these friendships with these men who went up the mountain with him. And even just like 2 weeks ago, he said to me, like, he told me he'd been thinking about the day he's going to take his son up a mountain.
Wow.
He's 13 years old.
That's beautiful.
You know, that AJ, he's dreaming about that. That he's dreaming about that.
My son has never said that to me to give you some encouragement.
My son said a lot of other things that I wouldn't.
Me too.
But the point being, I just love it. It's ingrained now. It's like it's imprinted on
him. He will never forget it, man. He'll never forget it. With Duke, it was funny because you said something that I want to go back to, but maybe just to highlight, I know for Duke, one thing we did was there's this place called Blue Pool here. Have you heard of Blue Pool?
I have heard of Blue Pool,
So it's 37 degrees year-round.
It's like the coldest. Isn't it one of the coldest bodies of water?
Yeah, and it stays, it's this pool. It stays 37 degrees year-round because of it. The water comes from an underground lava flow that basically regulates the temperature. And so it's this pool. You can see straight to the ground. It's 50 feet or so deep, but it's completely clear because microbiome can't grow. So it's this crystal clear, blue, beautiful pool, and it's 37 degrees all the time, no matter what. So it's a constant cold plunge is the idea. So we get to the trailhead, and he had a lot of hair. And so I was like, bro, we're starting this. I shave his head. We shaved his head at the beginning.
No way. Oh, yeah.
And he has like 12 dudes around. 12 meaning just these were the guys that I invited in.
There were 12?
There was 12. Yeah. Wow. And it wasn't on purpose. Like it was a discipleship thing or godly. It's just what happened. It was between family and dudes that were around and guys that I just knew like, I want them to be a part of this process. We shaved his head. That was a little extreme, but I was like, here's the process, dude. Jeez. So we shaved his head. And then we all do the 2-mile hike into Blue Pool. And the one thing I told all the guys, all the men, I was like, you have to get in. Like, we're doing a cold plunge. I don't care how you feel about it. I'm not asking my son to do this and have you dudes be the wrong example. You've got to do it. And so one guy didn't even bring shorts. He's just in his underwear.
Oh, my goodness.
And we all jump into this. I mean, it was so cold. but a good memory. Like the idea is like a memory. Yeah. And then we went back and we did a dinner, similar thing, a ceremony. Interestingly enough, my dad had already passed. He had already died. Yeah. But before he died, Duke was about 12 and a half when he died. And I knew that we were going to be doing this ceremony. And so I'd asked my dad while he was literally on his deathbed. I said, will you muster up any strength that you have to try to bless your grandson? Mm. And so I was able to record it and didn't show Duke, you know, so we get to this time when his grandpa, so Phil was there, Pops, and Phil was like blessing him. And I was like, obviously he's only one grandpa.
Yes.
But you have another and he's not here with us, but he was able to leave some words for you. And so I was able to play it for him, you know, for the first time. It's hard. I can't even go back and listen to it. It's really hard to listen to. It's beautiful. It's not hard in a negative way. It's just really, it's hard. But it was this really neat moment, you know, neat moment to just, to do. We weren't trying to talk about Primal Path, but I think what we're trying to do is share, like, this has been hard. Like, yeah. I've been trying to figure out, I think Primal Path and or other things are things that we've tried to do to help as we're parenting with our scars, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. To help mm-hmm. because we don't always have the framework to know. Right. So we're looking for ones to borrow. We even got, he didn't know this, and I don't recommend this for anybody, and this is not, you can judge me all you want, that's fine. But we did sit down and I had somebody come and give him and I and all of his cousins stick and poke tattoos. So they all got a Roman numeral 5 to mark the moment. So it's a tiny one. It's on the inside of his arm. Oh. You can barely tell. It took a lot of convincing for Elizabeth to give a 13-year-old a tattoo. It's very small, but we've marked the moment. And
yes.
I think with that specifically, why I even mention it is because like that's a little bit of my personality too. Like that's something that I want him to remember. Like my dad made me get a tattoo at 13. Like I want him to remember the extremeness. Yeah. Like I'm so serious about this thing. But with this concept about parenting from our scars, I think we're all looking for different ways and new ways. And the thing that you said about walking up the mountain and basically having your son basically teach you how to be a father. I cannot say enough about that. And I think that one of the things that helps me grow and parent from my scars more than anything is my kids. Mm. Is my kid, like I think of Birdie, who is so wonderful and unique and beautiful and has special needs and has a lot of complexities with how she has to move through the world and does move through the world. And I think it is her very, what people would call abnormalities, dysfunctions, disabilities, as they would all be labeled, are the biggest gifts to my fatherhood because she puts me back into my body and reminds me, like, God is asking you to be a good man for her and to help her on her journey. And you have the gift of her to lead her. But she teaches me by, if I'm even just too firm at any moment, even just with my tone, if she's not listening and just had a hard day and I'm just like, Birdie, you know, stop it. Even if it's not even aggressive, just too firm. She immediately just wells up with tears and crumbles. Oh, just says, stop. Can you just please not speak to me that way? You know, that moment is retraining me as a father to know, like, dude, I never want to speak
to you.
She's
your helper.
Exactly. Like, I think there's so many times where our kids are actually, God is using our kids and in a very healthy, normal, overused way to reparent us in a deep way and teach us how to be the parents and fathers and mothers that he's calling us to be.
Yeah. 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 Can I read something to you?
Please.
I pulled this up. I wanted to read this to you.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to Legacy Builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify, and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
It's called the Bible. You've probably seen this before.
I've heard of this.
It's not another testimony. It's the testimony of Jesus Christ.
Another one.
There's no more. I want to read this to you. This is, I have been, do you have times in your life where one story or image occupies the majority of like your spiritual real estate over a chunk of time, or like you just can't stop an image, like an image keeps coming back to you, or a chapter or a verse?
Yes.
Like the last 2 years, this passage, Genesis 2. Yeah, I cannot get rid of it.
It's funny because you mentioned it in the last podcast, and I think that even a couple times ago when I was with a big gap of time, 6 months or more, you mentioned it then too.
What, Genesis 2?
Yeah.
Did I really?
You've been like a dog on
a bone
with
this. What did I mention about Genesis 2 last time?
I can't remember. We have to go back and listen, but I remember you referencing it.
Okay. Okay, well, I hope I don't say the same thing, but this...
You won't. No, I just think you referenced it simply. It was... Let me not be simple here.
Let me get...
Get into it.
This is the end of Genesis 2, and it is the right after... So the man was created. He waited. We don't know how long he waited, and then the woman is created. So they're now together. He sings a song. This is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, and she shall be called woman, for she was taken out of the man. And the last, second to the last verse of Genesis 2 is just such an interesting verse. The text says, that is why a man leaves his father and his mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. That is why a man leaves his father and his mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. This one line to me is so interesting. There's so many layers to this. One. In almost every single ancient culture of all of history, it is always the woman who leaves the family to be married to the man. It is almost always that the woman is displaced to be married to the man. In fact, most of the stories in the Old Testament are women being displaced for the sake of the man. Yet you see here this little nudge against toxic patriarchy of like, actually the man leaves his mother and father to go to the woman. So it's like this element of like, it's a little bit of Sandy Richter is a friend of mine down at Westmont, did a little thing about how that's like just a little nudge of a correction. Like it should be the man who's displaced to go to the woman, not the other, that he's the one that bears the price to go and meet this woman. Okay. That's one thing that's really interesting. The second thing that's really interesting to me is that it is a commandment that is given, that we are to leave our parents. Like there's an element of we must leave, but it's not just that. It is also a commandment to parents to let your kids go. So it's about leaving your parents, and it requires that the parents let the kids go. I mean, if you're a parent who is so enmeshed with your child when they turn to be 22 and you're still meddling in if they're going to come to Christmas or not because they're your child, I don't think you've read this verse yet. You need to let your kid go. But the third thing that's most interesting to me about this is it is a very weird commandment to say you must leave your mother and your father. It is a weird commandment to give to two people who didn't have mothers and fathers. Adam and Eve didn't have parents.
Whoa.
Why in the world
I'm not thinking about
would God tell Adam and Eve
that's a great point
to leave your parents when they had no parents? So the commandment is actually not for them. Who's it for?
It's for us.
It is a commandment that is explicitly framed for everybody after the man and the woman. They didn't have parents to leave. In fact, they had a father, and leaving the garden represents them leaving the father. Wow. But that was never intended. God never wanted that.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. So in the next two chapters, Genesis 4.
You should be a college professor, by the way. Just my idea.
I agree. When the woman is created out of the man's side, what is he going to have for the rest of his life? He's going to have a scar on his side.
Yep.
Can you imagine being Cain or Abel, the first generation after the Garden of Eden? And every time you see dad take his shirt off, he's working in the garden, you know, every time you see dad take his shirt off, see, he has an interesting body because dad didn't have a belly button. But dad did have a scar in his side. Can you imagine the conversation Cain and Abel saying to dad as he's a little, they're little kids, dad, where'd you get that scar? Where did you get that? And to hear him, so good. Can you imagine Adam describing to them, God put me to sleep and your mom is out of the scar. It is built, it's not in the text. It doesn't say, but they would have known the scar. They would have seen it. They would have seen their dad's scar.
Yeah.
And he would have had to tell the story of his scar to the kids. Not, by the way, the last time in the Bible that we're going to have somebody with a scar on his side. Because the first scar on his side, of course, out of whom comes Eve, and out of Christ on the cross comes the new bride of Christ, the church. So the scar on the side thing is like totally this connection between the two. But I just, Cain and Abel would have said to dad, dad, where'd you get that scar? Where'd that come from? Where did that wound come from? Tell me that story. And every time they would have done that, Adam would have to say it again. Tell the story. I went to sleep. God put me to sleep. We have scars. You have scars. I've got scars. And some of them are from good things. Some are from bad things. Not all scars are bad. Adam's scar is not a bad scar. It's a good scar. But we've all got scars. And our kids very often are going to be the ones that are going to ask us the questions that force us to deal with the story. As a 44-year-old man, I know that you have a similar story as I do. It is because of my son, I am now beginning to fully grapple with the scars from my childhood. He's forcing me to do it. He's asking me too many questions. I can't sidestep it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the kids are the ones that see the scars, and it's to the kids we've got to tell the story. So the gift of kids, I mean, the gifts, so many kids, but the gift of kids is that they will ultimately at some level force us to deal with our family of origin.
Yeah.
On some level.
You know, I think there's a lot of people that I know, actually, before I say anything about that, that's beautiful. That's insightful. That's interesting. I'm going to be mulling that over, meditating on that. It's really a fascinating insight to something that's just almost hidden in plain sight about, you know, I never read that verse and was like, that's right. They didn't have parents, you know,
right.
That's a great, great, great. But how often is that? That is the verse that is quoted at every wedding.
This is why
I'm going to do a wedding this summer. I'm going to take this and I'm going to steal, like, they didn't have, who is this for? This is for you. I'm stealing this whole thing, by the way. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to steal that whole thing from you. I'll give you credit. As Dr. A.J. Swoboda would say, they didn't have parents.
That's right. You need,
And he didn't have a belly button, you know, just blow everyone's mind. Yeah. Anyway, I think as we were processing and talking, the thing that is really challenging is to face these scars can be very painful. Getting a scar is painful. And I don't know if you remember this, but I remember this very distinctly, because when I had fallen off this roof and got this massive injury, you know, they had to use a lot of stitches to sew so much of my face back together. And even though I was only five, it was such a vivid, dare I say, traumatic experience in the sense of the physicality of it, that I remember a lot of it, because it was just, it was very, very gnarly. And that's a similar thing with emotional scars and wounds. But I remember that there was this period of time where I was fascinated by the scar. I was fascinated because I had these little pokey things out of my face. I was like, this is fascinating. Like, it's cool. And then there was the day that I had to go get these stitches pulled out. To have 43 continuous stitches pulled out of your face. Nobody told me that was going to be a painful experience. And I think I'm trying to highlight with all of this that once you have a scar or once you have a wound, it doesn't just immediately scar over. It takes a good amount of time.
Yeah.
And I remember the season of time, even for a handful of years, when I would accidentally bump this.
Oh, it would hurt.
This, yeah. It would still, I mean, just a level of pain that I hadn't experienced.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been until I'm 39. Like I can't feel anything inside anymore. All the nerve endings are gone. They're dead. My kids think it's hilarious. They'll poke at it. They'll pinch it. They'll be like, oh my gosh, you can't feel this. And I'm like, I can't. They're fascinated. The overused analogy or idea to just simply say healing of these scars is not, it takes a long time. And I would say similar to that in the parenting arena, or at least for me in my own journey, it takes a long time to change when you're parenting with scars.
Yes.
Because my wife didn't have the same situation. You know, anybody that listens to this podcast knows she had a different situation or a different story than I did. She had a lot of, she didn't have as many scars.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy for her to see when I'm not parenting the way that I've said I want to parent. And it's really easy for her to be like, you don't want to be that person. And I'm like, agreed. But I don't really know how to not be that person because this is what I know. This is what's in my body. It's the procedural memory stuff. We just did an episode about this, about the procedural memory parts of us where we just are the automated responses that just come out of us that we haven't taken time to admit, address, or even process in a psychological sense, let alone a spiritual one. And so for anyone that's listening that's parenting from scars, I would just want to encourage you really briefly, very quickly, and just encourage you in a couple of things. I would say in my experience, very intentionality or aggressive learning. You've got to like learn and finding examples. I know for me, it has been, sounds like similar in some ways for you, is finding examples of fathers you want to be like, finding examples of others that have the trail that they've already set. I think God is also really gracious to give us fathers, even earthly ones, when we didn't have the kinds of fathers we wanted. And I would say pray for that. If you didn't have that, earthly mothers and fathers, like pray for that. I just want to highlight that it's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and none of that should deter you from doing it. It's worth it in every single way. But I just want to be honest too, because I mean, I don't know about you, but one of the most challenging things is when I find myself acting in a way that I can logically, emotionally, and spiritually say, I don't want to act, operate, or be that way, yet I am being that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
There, it's so hard. It's so humbling. It's so discouraging. It's really painful.
Yeah. Maybe, Brooke, this will be, I'll close with this. I've wondered, it's interesting. Somebody's doing the primal path for
Elizabeth,
girls.
Elizabeth for, and yeah, Diane.
Okay, so this is your wife. She's writing one for.
We're in the process of doing that right now. For the ladies.
Okay, so we've got one for boys. Mm-hmm. We've got one for girls. Mm. You know what somebody should write is somebody for the middle-aged 45-year-old guy who wishes that he could have had that experience. Like, what would it look like for me at 44 to ask 3 or 4 fathers to take me up a mountain?
Dude, we should do this.
Because I think there's a middle age thing where you're like, I want to do, if I'm going to do this for my son, I want to do it for me too.
Yeah.
And but it's, you know, it's a little bit different because you're initiating what should have been initiated for you.
Mm.
But finding a way, even in your middle years, don't write off your middle years as the years to wake up to what you needed as a kid.
Mm.
Maybe let a man take you up a mountain and initiate for you and make it the silliest thing. Go get some really bad pizza, horrible chicken wings.
Get tattoos, you're adults.
There you go. Yeah.
Mark the moment.
To add to what you're saying, don't let the absence from your childhood keep you from entering in today to what you need.
Mm.
And don't let that absence be shame or failure. It's not. You are changing the generations by you dealing with your own story and doing for yourself what maybe should have been done for you.
Yeah. Mm.
Brooke, I love talking to you.
Oh, you too, buddy. Yeah. And thank you for transparency, openness, honesty. Parenting from our wounds is a real thing, and we all have them. And I think the folks that I see that are the most trouble or that have the hardest time are those that have yet to wake up to the and accept the fact that their story has impacted them.
That's right.
And I would just want to say, if you're there, take that first step of asking Jesus, like, is there stuff?
Yeah.
Do I have things I need? Do I have scars?
Yeah.
We're all parenting in one sense or another from our scars, some more than others. And some scars, you know, like you had said about your friend, they cover more of his body.
That's right.
And some of our scars are really deep. So, so yes, thank you everybody for taking a minute and listening to two dudes process what it's like to parent with scars. But AJ, per usual, lovely talking, and thanks for your time.
Always a gift, sir. Thank you.